has certainly arrived where the season finale has taken place, and we need to obviously lead in with the awesomeness, which is... Happy birthday, Alan Stevens. There we are, you see. Thought we'd forgotten, but we couldn't possibly sort of let you go without that whole thing. And as they say in the best Alice in Wonderland Disney adaptations, happy unbirthday to you, Fiona Moore.
Thank you very much.
Marvellous. So, well, what do we say? What? It's like David Tennant being channeled from Titanic all over again. Where do you want to start, Alan?
Me?
Mm. Shall we start with the haunting of Villa Diodato? Shall we take
it? Oh, of course it is. The haunting of Villa Diodato. Mm. This apparently was. I haven't heard the original, but there was a big Finnish audio written by what was the name of the guy who wrote Ghostlight, Fiona?
Mark Platt.
Thank you, Mark Platt. Do you know the name of this story?
No, I don't, but I know the one you mean.
Yeah, basically, it's a story about how a Mary Shelley and the Doctor met, and they encountered a lone Cyberman, which she then got the idea for writing her book, Frankenstein's Monster, which is a bit of a naff idea, to be honest. Mm-hmm. You know? But that's what they ripped off. They ripped off of that story. So,
I
kind of feel that poor old... Mark Platt should get some money, but they won't, because there's lots of ideas that they rip off from Virgin Books and me and Big Finish Audio and various other people.
At least Robert Sherman was paid for Dalek, I suppose. I mean, he got to do it himself. At least Robert Sherman actually got to do Dalek himself, basically. So.
Yeah. He never worked for him again, though, did he?
No, that's true. Yeah.
And Mark Platt was paid for the Rise of Cybermen, because... They approached me and said, we're very interested in adapting your script for a Big Finish, but we don't, the one he did called Spare Parts, but we don't want you to write it, which he wasn't very keen about. And he said, well, if I'm not going to write it, no one else is. And then there was sort of a silence from them for a while. And then they, decided they were going to do something else, but they had to still put, Mark Platt's name on it, because they had effectively admitted that they had heard it and were influenced by it. But if you don't admit anything, if you just rip it off and don't tell them, then you don't have to pay anybody anything at all, which is, I mean, I understand there's a kind of continuum, isn't there, of Doctor Who thought, and, I suppose if anyone writes anything, it's somewhere going to be borrowed from something else. But, there are people who feel a bit, there's a lot of virgin authors who never, ever were asked to write for Doctor Who, and yet they, are competent writers and are annoyed seeing their own ideas taken off and stuck on screen with someone else's name on them. Does that make sense to you, Fiona?
Yeah.
So, apart from that, Haunting Villa Diodato, did we think it was a good start? Did we think it's finding interesting places? Did we feel as though... Look, it's Thing from the Addams Family running across the floor there, trying to grab hold of people.
I found a lot to like in it. I mean, I particularly liked the direction, actually. I liked that quite often in historicals they tend to forget that the light would come just from candles, and they overlight them. But whoever was doing the lighting was really keeping the light so that it looked like it genuinely was just coming from the light sources in the house. It wasn't too, I was sort of gritting my teeth and preparing for it to be all a kind of Mary Shelley hagiography like it was with Nikola Tesla a few weeks back. But the fact that she wrote Frankenstein's almost kind of peripheral to the story even.
So a good start from that point of view, despite the fact that
I like the sort of sapphire and steelness of having the house that where you go up the staircase and wind up going in the wrong direction. That's
more Castrovalva, really, wasn't it? And sapphire and steel.
Yeah, well, Castrovalva is a bit kind of overlit.
Yes, but the idea of going in one direction and coming back. Yeah. But I thought it was all right. I mean, it was obviously it was the bar isn't very high here, so, you know, in comparison to the, some of the things we've had this year, it was good. But I wasn't massively... I watched it the first time around and completely forgot it. Someone said to me, what was that about? And I just couldn't remember. And I had to watch it again before the new episode started. And as I watched it, I thought, oh, yeah, I remember that. But it just left no impression on me at all. But, you know, I know some people do like it. It's the only thing that like it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm, okay, well, it opened the way to, of course, everything we know is a lie. Everything you've been told is a lie. The ascension of the Cybermen.
Well, I, contrary to Fiona, I thought it was all right. You know, Fiona said, well, she'll tell you what she thought of it. But I thought it was all right. You know, I was, yeah, Siri.
Yeah, not exactly sort of the highest praise you've given Alan, but then again, in comparison to Robot of Sherwood, I suppose, quite solid on that basis.
Or Orphan 55.
Or indeed the Torchwood episode of Cybermen, which was, of course, put together. Yeah. Fiona, less positive from yourself in terms of ascension of the Cybermen?
I didn't hate it, but I thought it was boring, to be honest. You know, it really didn't, you know, I'm sorry because I'm sure a lot of work went into it, a lot of people were involved with it, but it, personally, it really didn't hold my attention. And a lot of it, you know, I found myself thinking, oh, you know, yes, of course they're going to go on a Cyberman ship, and of course there's going to turn out to be Cybermen on it, and, you know, of course there's this boundary, and of course there's some kind of hermit waiting there. You know, it just kind of... you know, it all seemed very similar. And, you know, the one thing that, you know, wasn't expected was kind of annoying. The fact that, you know, the doctor turns up with all this stuff and just seemingly has not done her research or prepared or anything, you know.
Then it's immediately wiped out.
Yeah. Oh, I've got all these anti-Cybermen things. Oh, wait, well, guess I should have figured out they could combat these. Oh, well, what now?
And why part of the TARDIS so far away from the battlefield?
And it's a bit puzzling what she's doing there anyway, since the general implication has been that the cyber war is part of history and, you know, events happened there. So it's a bit like, I don't know, you know, turning up in... Vienna 1939 and trying to assassinate Hitler, you know, use the cliche, you know, kind of a, what's the point, you know? Millions will die, yes, millions will die, but it's going to happen.
Yeah.
So, as I say, I was not
cyber
really...
Cyber war was a historical fact.
Yes, I was whelmed, shall we say.
And we know humans survived it, because it's Revenge of a Cybermen, there are humans in it, aren't there?
So. Absolutely, yeah.
I'm thinking that actually overall the season was an improvement on the first season of Jodie Whittaker and Chris Chibnall.
But that's not saying an awful lot.
I'm not sure if it was.
Ooh.
I'm sure.
Well, I mean, clearly the Master in full force and the Timeless Children completely, some people have said, I've heard it said in colleagues in the States, that they have completely destroyed William Hartnell's time in terms of his Doctor Who.
Those are people that are ignorant of
yeah,
Doctor Who.
Yeah, that's just drama queen.
Drama queen behaviour, ignorant of Doctor Who history. Because in 1976, there was a Doctor Who story called The Brain of Morbius, where it was proved then, though various fans then tried to sort of retcon it, and you know, by saying, oh no, it was Morbius's head, Morbius's faces, but it wasn't, it was the Doctor's faces. The producer, Philip Hinchcliffe, who is, you know, considered to be the one of the best producers ever worked on a show, said the intention was to, you know, put the idea that there were previous incarnations before Hartnell's Doctor. Mm. And when it was revealed that the Doctor could get another regeneration cycle, while actually picking up on something you said in The Five Doctors back in 1983, I immediately said, well, that basically legitimizes the idea that he probably had a regeneration cycle prior to Hartnell. I mean, I was saying this, like, you know, in 2012, and that the reason Doctor doesn't know about it is because, I know, the Celestial Intervention Agency wiped their mind. Now, whoever Chris Chibnall read my post, but more likely he worked along the same lines as I was working, because it's obvious, do you mean, that the Doctor had a previous regeneration cycle. And it was part of some sort of conspiracy. So, it, you know, anyone who says it's not, well, they've destroyed the cat. No, they haven't. It was all part of it. Do you mean it was, or the elements are there, and he just, you know, fused them together. So, my problem with the episode is that someone pointed out actually just now on Facebook that there's no thematic connection between. I mean, I think that the there was this long thread, wasn't there, it didn't seem to go anywhere at all about 2 years back, was it 3 years ago now, or 4 years ago, with the hybrid. What was the hybrid? Two warrior races come together. Was it the Daleks and the Time Lords? Was it the Doctor and bloody Clara? You know, what was all this about? And it sort of like fizzled out, didn't it? And there was an idea that it wasn't one creature, it may have been two creatures. Mm. Well, it seems now, but it very probably was the Master, who was fused with the Siberian and the Cybermen, who were, you know, Time Lord dead, who were resurrected as Cybermen. So both were warriors races, both were fused together, both, stood over the ruins of Gallifrey. So I think, you know, he was thinking in terms of making the, you know, sorting the prophecy out. But beyond the prophecy, there is really no reason for Cybermen to be in that story at all, is there, Fiona?
Not really, no.
Now, another thing is that, you know, it's a lot of tell, but not a lot of show. So, you know, you had a great...
Sorry.
60 minutes, yeah. You had 60
minutes. A little bit worried the coronavirus might be getting all the way to,
yes,
to the other sort of part of things.
Yes, I might say that. Don't worry, it's just asthma.
Okay.
So 60 minutes of basically explaining stuff to us. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I found it. You know, that does feel. I mean, various hysterical fans are coming on and saying, you know, does it mean for 50 years you believe this? How can they do? Well, it's not real. Doctor Who is not real. If they want to say that Susan is the transsexual brother of Rani, they can, because you cannot disprove that. Do you know what I mean? Well, it's fiction. There's no inner truth. There's no bed, you know, there to a reality there. You can say, you know, these things, as long as he doesn't directly contradict some other piece of fiction which has already been made. Or it can contradict some piece of fiction already been made, and you can say, well, the reason for that was because they were lying. Or you can put a spin on it and say, that wasn't the whole story. So, you know, people seem to get obsessed with the idea of canon and reality, and yet there is no reality. It is only a fiction, and you can do what the hell you like with it. And that's one of the secrets of Doctor Who's success, is continually changing and mutating. I mean, there's an interesting video up at the moment pointing out that basically you could argue the Doctor was from the 52nd century from Earth and was human, and that's why Susan went in, you know, left in the Dalek invasion of Earth. And various scripts, which were may have altered before they appeared on the screen, you know, suggested the Doctor built the TARDIS and that he came from Earth's future. And it was only with the War Games, when they introduced the Time Lords, which I think were the worst idea they ever came up with, that things suddenly changed. Suddenly the Doctor's got two hearts. I mean, when he is examined by a doctor in the Wheeling Space, he hasn't got two hearts then. She doesn't find anything weird about him. But suddenly he's in the hospital and he's got different types of blood and he's got two hearts and a respiratory system and, you know, all this stuff. So that was a huge shift from established continuity. And a bigger shift, what Chibnall's done now is he's actually tying stuff together, whereas Spirit of Space and the War Games is an effective, jump, isn't it, Fiona?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the problem with the Time Lords is that they are boring. They have never been very well thought out. Every one of them you meet is a ruthless, cunning, unpleasant person. And you've got to think, well, how come the Doctor is, you know, how did he come from this, these people? Mm-hmm. They're always inspiring. There's the monk, isn't there? There's the Master, there's the Rani. They're all damn villains. They had a war of the Daleks that killed hundreds of billions of people. And then, so the idea that, in fact, the Doctor comes from a different dimension and was effectively kidnapped and experimented on, and her DNA was used to create a Time Lord race who then set themselves up as the Lords of Time. And I've always disliked that idea, to be honest. Again, it's the idea of a Doctor's a Lord and all that stuff. It's kind of... You know, it always kind of rattled my cage a bit. So the idea that they're just, what would you call them? They're riding on the back of someone else, aren't they?
Yeah.
And effectively abusing that person by mind wiping. I think that's, you know, I could have written that. I'd have been perfectly happy with that.
Yeah.
But
well,
I don't think
Ursula Le Guin wrote it first.
Well, there you go then. So there, Ursula Le Guin. Thank you, Ursula Le Guin. Ursula K. Le Guin, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes.
The K, so you won't get her muddled up with the other Ursula Le Guin.
Yes.
On that level. Yeah, good. I'm glad he done it, to be honest. And I think, but on the other level,
momentarily there. I mean, it's almost as though you're having something good to say about Chris Chibnall. I mean, is this, have we gone into another dimension here?
Well, he doesn't, there's nothing in what he has done that, no matter what you may read from lunatic foaming fans. There's nothing, and I know the show back to front, there is nothing he has done which contradicts canon. And indeed, one of the big problems I always had with the thing was the Time Lords, because they, effectively, the Doctor was a man of mystery, you know, mysterious traveler in time and space, and only the Doctor, and then suddenly he comes from Gallifrey, and here's his brother or whatever, you know, and there was, and his master was his best mate, and all that stuff. And so effectively, the mystery of the Doctor was smacked straight in the head. Mm-hmm. And by saying that, in fact, we don't know where she came from, and everything we know about the Doctor is wrong, is effectively re-establishing that mystery which was lost. And they tried it during the Cartmel era, but they screwed it up big time. They started, you know, there was lots of things going wrong at the time, you know, and the BBC hated the show, and I can see what they were trying to do. They were trying to re-establish the mystery of it, but it didn't quite. And then they explained it, didn't they, Fiona?
Yeah.
You know, you know, first of all, they started removing details concerning it, because they suddenly started pulling back on it. And then the Virgin books came out, and they were obsessed with it, and they kind of came up with an explanation which about falling into a loom, and, oh, I don't know what it was, and the Doctor being the Other, wasn't there? There was the Omega Rassilon and the Other and stuff. Or there was also an earlier idea that the Doctor was God, and the giant JNT said, well, you can never say, never say that. So there was some confused ideas, but the core of it was that the Doctor was effectively had become this boring person.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why he was a boring person was because the Time Lords. And once you remove the Time Lords, in fact, fundamentally remove, not just kill them, but say they weren't even anything to do with the Doctor at all, then you have restored what was lost. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I suspect then you might be giving it a good sort of score from that point of view. We come around to those particular things. I know we hate this, Fiona, and you don't have to do it if you don't want to, but let's go with in the order that we've considered them, The Haunting of Villa Diodati from yourself.
Yeah, that was the one I liked best of the most recent three.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Alan, yeah. Did you want to quantify it at all?
Well, Fiona's going to have a different score to me.
Yeah.
What would you give? 5, 8, 7?
I don't know.
Fiona's night scoring, I give it 5.
Okay. Ascension of the Cyberman, Fiona? Not good, really, from
your
point of
view. No, I wasn't wowed. I didn't hate it, but I wasn't wowed.
Yeah. Alan?
I'd give that 6.
Mm-hmm. And The Timeless Children, Fiona?
To be honest, similar. You know, I wasn't... I was just a little disappointed by it. You know, it could have been interesting. It could have been a new twist. But then I was sort of like, good heavens, you know, the twist turns out to be the twist that everybody on social media has been predicting since Escape, since Fugitive from the Jadoon.
I had thought we might have had another cameo from Captain Jack, actually. But
no, I really didn't think so. Not no, with Barrowman's current presenting schedule.
Well,
that was just
true.
Hammered in, wasn't it? I think, you know, there's one of the things. We did a book on Battlestar Galactica, and one of the things as they were coming towards the end of the show was that they would suddenly, people would turn to this, there was an episode, wasn't it, like the Info Dump Machine from Hell, wasn't
mm-hmm.
it, yeah? And when you start trying to sort of explain backstory with, you know, not a lot of episodes, I mean, you had they had 10 episodes to play with here, and if what they've revealed here was spread over those 10 episodes, that would have worked. But like, 6 of the episodes were just standalones, weren't they, Fiona?
Yeah.
And 3 of them were shockingly bad.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think, so on the one, so, but I think there are things said. I mean, there was a character, wasn't there? There was a shot of one character who was dressed very similar to the Valyard.
Yeah.
And she was saying about, this is, you know, we do not interfere, but mm-hmm. in fact we do. And then there was an entire section of the Matrix which was closed down. So clearly
yeah.
that's going to be explained, you know, next season. But the problem with doing this is you have no longer, the episode is a setup for something we're not going to see now for another 12 months.
Well,
you
no,
mean?
It'll be January. I mean, either January the 1st or Christmas Day. I mean, one of those two things.
Well,
so 10 months
away, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, that's next year almost, isn't it? You know, we're only March 2nd now. So
yeah.
April, May, June, July, August, September, October, November, December. That's 9 months away, you know. I'm expecting the audience to remember and keep everything in their head as to what happened in the episode. Fans will, but the general public won't, will they?
Mm.
And is this,
you know,
at the heart... Is this at the heart of the challenge that we hear that in terms of viewing figures they are dropping off a cliff, and actually there are problems in terms of the ratings?
Oh, I'm sorry, don't get me started on the alleged viewing figures dropping off a cliff.
Okay.
Go on, no, get us started on this.
Actually, yeah, because, you know, you might. This is not ranty, but this is something that's really increasingly bothering me. I mean, first of all, well, as you know, Alex, I tend to be skeptical of the cult of viewing figures in Doctor Who fandom anyway, because, to be honest, initial overnights don't mean whether a story is any good or not. They just mean the number of people that watched it, and that can vary. I mean, you know, the first episode of The Daleks did not get high viewing figures, and nor did the second, because, you know, who's going to tune in on the basis of a sink plunger menacing Jacqueline Hill, you
Indeed.
Know? It's only with the third story, when the people who had watched it told their friends, that people started tuning in. Does that make episode one of The Daleks and episode two of The Daleks bad? No, it doesn't. It just means that not so many people are watching them. However, now we're in the 21st century, things are even worse, because people really, really are, I'm sorry, but people really, really are watching more and more on streaming. On the last season of Doctor Who, I got told the six-month viewing figures. And to be honest, by 6 months, they were pretty much on par with every other series of new Doctor Who. So, you know, to be honest, kids, you know, kids have always formed a significant portion of the audience for Doctor Who. And the kids, you know, are not necessarily, especially, are not necessarily going to watch it when it's broadcast.
And the other thing is that people say, oh, I'm not watching Doctor Who now, or, you know, fans do, you know.
Yeah.
But I know they will.
Yeah.
And the only reason they're saying that at the moment is because they know they have the option.
Yeah.
You know, all of Doctor Who is available on iPlayer. If this show was like it was back in the 1970s, where it was only shown once and once it was over, they'd be watching it. Even if they were hating it, they'd be watching it, because the chance of watching it again were remote, weren't they?
And people have, and the thing is, people know they have the option. You know, I've heard people for this and other series, you know, I mention it, I say it's good, and they're like, oh, well, you know, well, I've got Netflix, I'll pick it up when I've got a gap in my schedule. You know, or a guy said, you know, I'm going into hospital, I'm going to have a couple of weeks convalescence, I'll catch up on my box sets. I mean, look, you know, I'm currently watching Preacher. Preacher has been out for 4 years, but, you know, I haven't had an Amazon Prime subscription, and now I'm catching up with it.
And you can see Picard as
you
well.
And I'm saying to people. I'm catching up with this, and nobody's saying, oh, you missed out, you missed out. They're just saying, oh, isn't it good?
It doesn't mean that Chibnall Doctor Who is good.
No.
It just means you cannot use the rating stick to beat it with.
Yeah, and it really bothers me when I see things like, you know, they're commissioning another season of Doctor Who despite the ratings being terrible. I mean, first of all, what do the ratings have to do with it? And secondly, you know, they're not actually
It's high time the license fee was withdrawn, so it would have to survive in the commercial world of Rupert Murdoch. Let's not go there.
That's the agenda behind it, although the sad thing is I still see it on things like The Mirror, which really should not have a stake in that sort of dialogue.
Oh, well, it could be worse. It could be getting the viewing figures that Picard is getting. Still, never mind. That's another line entirely. Amazon Prime. Fantastic. Well, I think that's rounded off the series.
Well, no, you haven't asked me about the score, have you?
The score for Timeless Children?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would give it two scores. I would give it a 9.
For the heart.
And a 5. The 5 is for the way the episode was constructed, which was badly, you know. And the 9 was all the thought that appears to go into it, because there's these setups. I mean, as I said, there's one character played who was dressed like the Valad, which hasn't been explained, and that's going to obviously appear later in.
And you got the Jadoon coming back, and you got the Daleks, and you got cliffhanger ending, and you got what?
And I think she was put on Sharda, wasn't she, Fiona?
Could be, yeah.
I mean, that word that name they gave it is an anagram of Sharda.
Is it right?
Yeah. So I mean, there is a lot of setup there, and I think, you know,
lots of Easter eggs, you see. Lots of Easter eggs, even though we're into the second week of Lent. Marvellous.
Yeah. So on the one hand, you know, I think he's put an enormous amount of thought into it, you know, and he's set up a number of ideas. I just think that the execution was lacking. I mean, like, an example, there's this old guy turns up, isn't he, and he's involved in the Year of Resistance or whatever, and suddenly, you know, the Doctor's confronted with the Master, and she's got this plunger to press and killed everybody, whoever, and she won't do it. He turns and says, I'll do it. Okay, great. It just basically lets the Doctor off the hook.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? From committing suicide and ending the show. You know, as soon as he came in, you thought, the only reason this guy's here is because he can come in and save her, do you mean? And yet there's nothing more. I mean, the performance is quite good, and he looked quite good, but there was nothing to him, was
there? Yeah, there wasn't really any sense that this decision to sacrifice himself was some kind of the culmination of some kind of arc or whatever.
And a lot of the dialogue I found, you know, one when I was working with Chris Bowdre, he said one thing you do is you cross out all the cliches, and if you can't, if you want to use a cliche, take it and turn it on its head, so it says something else, you know. Chris Chibnall just writes all the cliche, he just leaves it as it is, and so the dialogue is cliche, and if the dialogue is cliche, then you don't really believe in the characters. So, you know, perhaps if he was writing it with someone else, you know, someone who was good, then you could have the ideas in a story which was, you know, sound, if you get my meaning, you know, where a lot of people, you only isn't alone there, there was someone else I was looking at today saying, you know, I was wishing, when is this episode going to end, you know, I mean, I wasn't thinking that because I was watching it and because I know the lore of Doctor Who, I was thinking, well, that's interesting, he's going to go there, is he? That wasn't picked up, will that be picked up? So that my mind was working when watching it, but that is from a fan, hardcore fan perspective, you know, there are other fans who just watch it as I'm bored, you mean?
Well, I thought it was okay. Let us move on. That is effectively the conclusion of the thoughts of Alan Stevens and Fiona Moore.
Not forever.
Of course not forever.
I am watching the card, may I add?
Exactly. I should hope so. You know, blue skies, nothing but blue skies from now on. We will speak again, no doubt, in the very near future, but I think that deserved a merited special 27-minute package, which will be released as a podcast in your birthday week, Alan. So there we are. Many happy returns, as they'd say in a series that was based in Port Marion, at least partly.